This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's January the 27th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's from FCC Futures in Williamsville, Illinois. In agricultural news, scientists think they may know why the bird flu is so deadly. An official from the European Union says his organization of nations has nothing to lose if the WTO fails. And Iowa Democrat Senator Tom Harkin has rebuked USDA's J.B. Penn for a comment he made about BSE and the Japanese beef market. Dave Dickey will have all the details shortly. Two other notes before we get started with this Friday edition of your Closing Market Report. Don't forget to stay with us through our weather segment. That comes just after the bottom of the hour. Today we'll talk with Steve Hilberg out of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. And remember to check out our WILL Ag homepage on the web. There you can sign up for our free weekend newsletter and catch any of the daily ag programming you may have missed. Heck, we even have a series of podcasts you might subscribe to. And one other thing, if I haven't said it lately, thank you. Thank you so very much from Dave and I for listening to the ag programming right here on your public radio station, WILL, AM 580.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The March wheat at 343.5, down a penny. The May contract down one as well, 354.75 the settlement price. March wheat in Kansas City at 393.75, down a penny and 3/4. Now to the March corn, 218.75. They were up a penny and 3/4 today. May contract up 1.75 at 228.5. And July futures, 237.5, up 1.75. September corn, 244.5, up a penny and a quarter for the day. Soy complex, where the real gains happened today, 589.25 in the March contract, up 16.25. May futures, 599.75, up 15.25. And July at 609.5, up 14.75. November bean, 621, they were up 15 cents. March bean meal, 186.40, up $6.10. And the March bean oil up 54 at 22.05. Feeder cattle now, the March contract, 110.62.5 from the Mercantile Exchange, down 85 cents. February live cattle down $1.05 at 93.90. And February lean hogs at 56.25 were down 92.5 cents.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Hi, Mike.
Todd, you're going to give me 20 points and we'll bet a steak dinner at Alexander's on the game?
Yeah, I'm wearing the wrong colors today, buddy. I got up this morning. I told him this before I got on the air. Wasn't thinking about what I'm doing. I'm a U of I grad, of course.
I'm being generous, giving you 20 now. Come on.
Yeah, we'll kick your butts all over the place. All right. I got up this morning, put a black shirt on with gold accents. That was not a fashion faux pas when you're on campus here at the U of I, that's for sure.
Yeah, I hope it's not time for your annual review. You may not get the increase you wanted.
Well, the folks over at Purdue might help us out.
There you go.
Who knows? And I'm sure Chuck Shelby's happy.
Yeah, there you go. I'll tell him that when I get off the air.
Yeah, I'm sure Chuck is happy. Hey, we want to talk about the soy complex, but am I right? $6.10 higher in the March bean meal?
Yes, that's exactly right. On the day. Yes, sir.
Okay, so
yes, sir.
I know we were up 16.25, but I don't know whether that's anything in particular in that bean meal contract, but that's a pretty good size gain.
No, you know, that's probably one of the biggest things that's going on in this market that no one's really touched on, including us, is that the bean oil and the bean meal have been extremely supportive all week long, and the meal chart on a weekly basis tested some pretty significant trend lines and moving averages and held up really well. And, you know, that's pretty surprising given the stocks increase USDA gave us last month. And I think that probably was a minor player, but a key player in allowing the beans to perform like they did today. We did the numbers for the week, and the way we look at it, the 72% of the weekly gains in beans happened today. So we would rate today's rally in soybeans, excluding what we just talked about in meal and oil, as a reaction to what the corn and wheat did earlier in the week, and the fact that we think the funds probably came in and said, hey, if wheat and corn can go up, why aren't beans, especially when you have crude oil up $1.50 on the day?
Yeah, that was my next question, whether we had a handle on who actually was in buying and whether DBC had gone ahead and bought beans as well, although I don't think that's in the mix of what they've been purchasing. DBC, of course, is the Deutsche Bank Index Fund that was instituted about a week and a half ago, and corn and wheat are in the mix of what they're purchasing, along with aluminum and gold and I forget, something else, maybe crude oil.
Yeah, the same thing today. It looks like the soy complex found 3,000 to 4,000 contracts, but DB was not noted in that. Corn was up around 16,000 contracts. Deutsche Bank was noted in that, and the wheat around 4,000 contracts. Not a lot of talk there on, you know, who was buying that.
Oh, wow. Deutsche Bank still buying corn?
Yes. In
Holy
fact,
smokes.
In fact, I'm reading on further here, and it looks like in the wheat, too, Deutsche Bank was responsible for about 1,500 contracts.
Holy smokes, I'd like to get hold of their analyst and see what they have to say about the corn market. And, you know, because we're looking at a 2.4 billion bushel carryout, and I know Dan Zwicker told us yesterday that there are all kinds of things on the horizon that we could talk about. The Argentina crop, he said, got dinged up a bit, and then we look out, and Dan probably and others are thinking that this drought that's happening in the southwest of the United States could spread deeper into the Midwest. I think it's made its way into Missouri at this point. And, of course, we're still under drought conditions in the northern part of the state of Illinois.
Yeah, and, you know, Todd, it's going to be probably coming out of my mouth a little bit strange, but the way the Deutsche Bank issue unfolds to us, it's more based upon modern portfolio theory, which really took hold in the early 80s, and it said diversification, diversification, diversification. If you look at interest rates and inflation, and you align those to the stock market and you align those to commodities, they have an inverse relationship to themselves. So to us, the Deutsche Bank people are saying, let's put 10 or 15% of our portfolio into commodities because we still think inflation and interest rates are a big issue. And if our stock numbers and our stock portfolio doesn't perform, the losses won't be as great. And that's really the key issue with modern portfolio theory, that you don't get a gain when it's all said and done, but your losses aren't as bad because not all eggs are in one basket. So I really wonder whether they care about some of these smaller microeconomic issues.
I want to know. Let's say their dollar cost averaging in this week, and it's a little tough to do it over 5 days or 10 days to do a dollar cost averaging, but let's say that's the way they're getting into the marketplace. What happens when they stop buying?
Well, and that goes back to when globalization and interest rates and inflation start to turn the corner, which everything does work in cycles, and currencies are a major player in this whole thing. And when that does happen, or when their returns are not what they have stacked them up to be with their investment community and their customers, then that's when you start looking for the exit door, and you have to be on the alert of that. We were in Casey this week. We were at Gifford at the farm show. We went and saw a couple good guys in Tolono yesterday. Everybody's got the same thing on their mind. When are the funds going to stop buying? And that really goes back to, we think, when the emerging market sector is not as good looking as it is, world growth is not as good as it looks. When you have China come out at 10% GDP, and a lot of the private guys out there that do the economics in Asia say they're underestimating on purpose so that the world doesn't get mad at them, or the United States Congress doesn't get mad at them, and they're underestimating that 10% GDP, you still have interest in commodities. And I think that's really, to simplify things and probably oversimplify things, that's where it would be right now.
You took a little longer-term look at that question that I asked you, and I liked your answer, but I was thinking, what happens if they looked at their bundle of money and said, we need to, because they came in, you know, they developed it last week, so that would have been when they started to buy, and they wanted to be in the corn and the wheat pit, and say they said, we want to buy corn and wheat over a two-week period.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? My question really is, what happens if when they get in and they're done and they just sit?
And when
their buying dries up, what happens?
Sure. Well, that's where your open interest stays very, very high because they won't get out of their long contracts. And that's tended to be, we think, along with the stronger demand in the world markets and the stronger demand for soybeans especially, that's probably the main two reasons why open interest has stayed high and why the lows have not been as low in soybeans as a lot of people have projected, is because they just sit there with this huge open interest of contracts, and no one can push them out. So nobody, you know, people pretty much, the other traders, pretty much stop trying. And, you know, soy was a perfect example this week. Our bet would be that on that last commitment of traders report, they came in, the funds came in net short on the commitment of traders, so it'd be probably the commodity trading fund sector, not the index guys, but the commodity trading fund sector came in short around 6,500 contracts, futures and options. Our bet would be, Todd, they probably got caught short because the index guys came back into the wheat and corn, and pretty much the same thing that happened back before the holidays happened all over again in soybeans this week. And when the commitment of traders comes out this afternoon, even though it won't take into consideration the last 3 days, we would suspect that those commodity trading funds, those shorter-term guys, are going to be more flat than they were last week.
Okay, so you can pull open interest up on your ProfitX there. And I'm just wondering, historically, can you see the open interest staying, for instance, in the beans last year? Can you see it setting there open and higher than usual?
Yes, and that's coming from people that we talk to in Chicago as well, not just on the screen, but people in Chicago as well say these index guys stay in it for the long haul.
But we ought to be able to see that in the open interest, is what
exactly
I'm saying.
Right. If you track it over a five-year period, I would suspect that you're seeing increasing open interest. And it goes back to the commodity fund investment as a whole. There's some good statistics out there that 5 years ago you only had $30 billion coming into managed futures. Now you're up to around $130 billion. Just in 5 years, you've seen that kind of an increase. We would suspect that that would correlate pretty closely with the open interest numbers.
And so the next time I see or talk to you, I'm going to ask you the same question. I expect an answer.
Well,
I want you to go look
it
up.
I am not. You gave an answer.
I want you to look it up.
No, I'm not tracking it right now.
I'm not griping at you about it.
Okay.
I was just kind of hopeful that you might go look it up, or maybe Dave and I can go look it up. Dave might be doing it right now on ProfitX if he can pull that up. But it'd be interesting to see if you can see that open interest, because we're trying to, over the long run, farmers, you and the brokers that we talk to are trying to figure out what the index funds are doing. And if we can track it maybe historically in the open interest, that might give us something to lean on.
Sure. And that's probably one of the best ways, because they can be classified as commercials when it comes to the index guy. So the commitment of traders is not as reliable for us. So,
yeah, right. Okay. So now let's talk about these moves in the week. Of course, you said 72% was the increase for the beans, and that was just on the day's rally. That portion of the day's rally for their up, and they were up, 23 cents, I think?
24
cents
in
the beans. The wheat, pretty impressive, up 17 cents in the July, up 17 and a quarter, 364. Dease corn up 11 and three quarter cents at 254 and a quarter. These numbers that you think farmers should just look at and say, I'll wait, or do they need to do something about it?
Well, we're in the camp that the wheat market could have a lot more in it in terms of upside, and what we mean by a lot more is 30 to 50 cents in Kansas City, but that is a lot of that is dependent upon the weather. But if you take that out of the mix, Todd, there's still that very heavy supply that you brought up at the top of the show, and our mindset is you're hitting levels right now for both 05 beans and 05 corn. We would like you to sweep the bins and on this rally for 06 corn. We'd like you to get started on hedging. For 06 beans, we'd like you to get caught up to about a third. The key this year is don't oversell your cash bushels before planting in case the rally comes, before March 1 or April 1.
We appreciate you being with us for the day.
Hey, Todd, have a nice weekend, and good luck to you. I'm hoping guys are going to be able to pull this one off.
Yeah, me too. I hope I get home and get to change shirts before somebody really sees me in this. All right, I'll talk to you later.
Yep, bye-bye.
Mike Zuzalo is with the Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Well, at the bottom of the hour, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. His name's Steve Hilberg. AM 580's own Mike Sola forecast for the two-state region tonight calls for mostly cloudy skies, some showers arriving in western Illinois after midnight. The lows, he says, will range from 33 in northwestern Illinois to 45 in the far south. Tomorrow, Mike says, in Illinois and western Indiana, cloudy skies, some occasional showers, a little thunderstorm or two. In the remainder of Indiana, mostly cloudy. Some rain developing during the afternoon. Highs tomorrow from 42 in northwestern Illinois to 57 in the far south. Dave Dickey's here now with a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, scientists may have found out what makes the H5N1 influenza virus so deadly. Bird flu viruses have a gene that may make them especially destructive to cells. Researchers have identified a protein called NS for non-structural protein, which is only made by the H5N1 virus once it's infected a cell. The avian version seems to allow the virus to do much more damage to a cell than human versions of NS. U.S. researchers from St. Jude Hospital in Memphis made the announcement yesterday. The World Health Organization reports that since the H5N1 virus resurfaced in 2003, it has infected at least 152 people and killed 83 of them. The European Union will lose, in the words of EU Trade Commissioner Peter Mandelson, next to nothing if a global round of trade talks fail to open up world markets. Mandelson made his comment yesterday ahead of a meeting kicking off today in Switzerland of trade ministers from the world's major trading nations. Mandelson went on to say that U.S. demands the EU do more to open its markets to agricultural products are driving the talks, quote, into the ground. Meanwhile, a bilateral free trade agreement between the U.S. and Switzerland appears to be in trouble. Once again, issues involving agricultural products are a main sticking point. The Swiss cabinet continues to insist that sensitive agricultural products be subject to special treatment that would maintain protective barriers to imports. The ranking Democrat on the Senate Ag Committee is taking USDA Undersecretary J.B. Penn to task for remarks he made about BSE. Penn told reporters in Tokyo that Japanese consumers have a better chance of being hit by a car than coming down with mad cow disease. Iowa Republican Tom Harkin says he's not amused.
Dr. Penn's statements of saying, well, not a big deal, you've got more chance of getting hit by a car or lightning, or whatever he said, than getting BSE, that just is not very helpful. I mean, again, we should be taking the steps necessary to reassure Japan that we are going to redouble our efforts and that it won't happen again.
Japan reinstituted its ban on U.S. beef a week ago. Yesterday, Japanese ag officials told Parliament that the 700 tons of U.S. beef already in Japan after the country eased its import ban in December is safe to eat. Also yesterday, the U.S. ambassador to Tokyo suggested that Japan become more involved in the inspections of U.S. meat packers. Thomas Schieffer also says it will be several weeks before the U.S. submits a report to Japan on how banned spinal material ended up in a veal shipment. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency says it has tested 25 animals from the Alberta birth farm where the country's latest case of mad cow disease was found, and all have come back negative for BSE. The agency says it is continuing its investigation of the feed that was provided to animals on the farm. Contaminated feed is thought to be the primary way in which animals contract mad cow disease. Deputy U.S. Ag Secretary Chuck Connor on Thursday held a teleconference to announce billions in USDA funds for hurricane relief.
USDA is dedicating $2.8 billion to assist those impacted by the hurricanes. $1.2 billion of this amount will help agricultural producers of many different crops or livestock to recover from damage to their operations in the states of Alabama, Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas.
But Connor says only $250 million of that funding will go straight to farmers and ranchers. Those funds will be distributed through the new tree, hurricane, livestock, and feed indemnity programs, as well as the aquaculture block grant program. And the World Trade Organization is expected to issue a ruling on the U.S. case against the European Union's anti-biotech trade policies on February 1st. That's according to officials from the U.S. Trade Representative's Office and USDA, who held an off-the-record briefing on the matter Thursday. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Commodity Week airs at 11:30 a.m. Central Time on Saturday mornings. Tomorrow, our guest, Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, will take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast and ask him all about the upcoming South American crop, how the corn in Argentina is doing, and what's been happening with the Brazilian bean crop. That's tomorrow at 11:30 on Commodity Week. If you can't wait, you can pick it up after 6 o'clock Central Time on our website at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Just click on AM on the left-hand side of the page and Agriculture on the right.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Morris at 815-941-3706. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Joining us now for a look at the cash grain market is Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures at the Williamsville Farmers Co-op in Williamsville, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Much in the way of corn movement this week from the farmers in your area there in Logan, Sangamon County?
It has been a pretty busy week. I just totaled up numbers here a few minutes ago before coming on the air, and we probably have bought 10% of our annual volume this week.
And that would be how big, it's been a busy week. Is that a good week? I mean,
much above normal week.
Okay, and then on the beans?
Bean movement has been quiet. Not much going on soybeans yet. Of course, we've seen a lot higher numbers in the past 30 days on beans.
Then are you shipping that corn on the basis to the Gulf, or is it going over to
Decatur? Right now the processors are still the numbers for us, so this corn is mostly going to Decatur, some to the Peoria Pecan processor, but mostly going to Decatur right now.
Basis there has been strong?
It has been hanging in pretty well. I had suspected we might see it back off this afternoon, but it looks like they're continuing to hang in. And it stands head and shoulders above where everyone else is. Last night it was, and we're equal distant freight between the river and the processor market, and they were running a good 11, 12 cents ahead of the river.
So I see that they're at, what, about 201.5 or something like that. I'm just looking at the Central Illinois cash bids off of the FarmDoc website, and I think they used Decatur for that for corn, and then the beans were at 550. That was from yesterday, up 6.5 cents. So the marketplace has been pretty decent, and the producers have been rewarding it. Have they also been making new crop sales to you?
We have seen a small amount of new crop sales. Really pretty quiet on the new crop yet.
And what do you make of Deutsche Bank being in the marketplace for corn and wheat?
I guess I think that is probably been the big factor this week between them coming in and buying and helping out the moving averages, giving some technical buy signals that drove other funds into buying. And I tend to think that is more of a factor than the dry weather talk in Argentina. The other supportive factor has been, I'd say, the wheat pit lagging over into corn, although we kind of separated those trades out today.
And that would be dry weather, of course, in the wheat pit in the southwestern part of the U.S., mostly on hard red winter wheat, but spill over into Kansas City as that spread into Missouri and parts of the soft red winter wheat growing areas as well. Your bids for the day are?
We are at $2 on nearby corn and $5.58 on soybeans.
Bruce, we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures at the Williamsville Farmers Co-op in Williamsville, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Friday afternoons. In about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with Steve Hilberg. Your local newscast comes up next.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. The mayors of Champaign and Urbana are holding a joint news conference today as the cities explore a takeover of municipal water services. At the same time, the mayors accused the utility's current owner, Illinois American Water, and its parent company of conducting a push-pull. They say some residents are being called and asked questions that criticize the proposal to buy Illinois American's Champaign-Urbana facilities. The parent company, German-based RWE, is selling off its American Water holdings. People in Champaign County made more than 2,200 suggestions on how to improve the quality of life, and now a large group of community leaders is translating those ideas into plans. About 400 people sorted through those suggestions today in the next stage of the county's Big Small All planning effort. The end result, a long-range and broad plan, is expected to be complete and ready for community review later this year. An Indiana inmate has been executed for the 1981 killings of a Howard County couple after a full night of appeals. Marvin Bigler's final words early this morning were, "Let's get it over with." The execution began about an hour after a 6-3 Supreme Court vote that overturned a lower court's ruling to allow Bigler another appeal. Bigler was an admitted drug dealer and was convicted in the killings of Tommy Miller and his pregnant wife, Kimberly Miller, in the town of Rushville. Utility regulators in Pennsylvania have given thumbs up to the proposed merger of Chicago-based Exelon and Public Service Enterprise Group. The union would create the nation's largest electric and gas utility, but it still needs approval from New Jersey state regulators and the U.S. Justice Department. A railroad company that featured paintings of Abraham Lincoln in calendars printed more than 50 years ago is donating the original paintings to the former president's museum and library in Springfield. The 20 paintings will go on display starting tomorrow as part of a project exhibit called Mr. Lincoln's Attic. The museum's curator says he'd often seen framed copies of the paintings but never could find the originals. It turns out they're hanging on walls at the railroad company's offices in Springfield. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to The Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana and the Closing Market Report. Joined now by Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey, to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Hi, Steve. Tell me about this warm weather we've been having in the month of January.
Well, it's in many areas unprecedented, Todd. It's going to probably be, if it's not going to be the warmest January in the last 100 or so years, it's going to be very close to it in most of Illinois and the Midwest. Very unusual to have this kind of stretch of warm weather in January. Normally we can have some warm weather, but to have it last as long as it has, and locally here in Champaign-Urbana, we have not been above or below normal since December 21st. Every day the temperatures have averaged above normal. So it's pretty remarkable. And right now, through basically yesterday, temperatures across Illinois are now about 10 to 13 degrees above normal for the month. So we're probably not going to see much change in that over the next couple of days because no real push of cold air yet.
Any concerns about precip and totals that we've been stacking up for the year or the last rolling 6 months?
Well, as you know, we've been experiencing a pretty severe drought in northwestern and northern Illinois over the last several months, 6 months or so. Good news is, by the time the month ends, it looks like most of Illinois will at least receive normal to above normal precipitation. Those areas that are a little short right now probably will pick up some from this storm that we'll be getting coming in here tomorrow and Saturday, and then perhaps a little bit more precip on Monday with some colder air coming in. So in that respect, it's pretty good. On the other side of it, normally we don't get a whole lot of rain in January. Normal rainfall in northern Illinois is only about an inch and a half. But the fact that we're getting it is good, and it will tend to stay in the ground because, one, the ground's not frozen, and two, nothing's growing now. So what moisture goes in there will likely stay.
And your forecast for the overnight and tomorrow?
Well, it just basically looks like this next storm system coming in will bring us some very spring-like weather with showers and thunderstorms and temperatures well up into the 50s probably in many parts of Illinois. But everybody should hold on to their hats because there are signs that we could be getting back to winter weather in another week or 10 days.
We appreciate it. Thanks
okay,
much.
Todd.
Steve Hilberg is with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, where he's the director. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 for Commodity Week, our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. Our guest tomorrow, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Until then, I'm Todd Gleason.